Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spotlight Honors, a production of Rave Waves Book Club and Rave Waves Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ron Yates, broadcasting live from Murrieta, California, in the heart of Southern California's wine country. Today, Spotlight Honors is sponsored by Just Her Poetry by D.L. Finn. We'll learn more about this excellent publication later in the show. But if you'd like to learn how you can sponsor an episode of Spotlight Honors, simply visit the Rave Waves Blog Talk Radio main page on the RRBC site for details. Now, before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that you can participate in the show with comments or questions on Twitter by typing in hashtag RRBC Spotlight Honors into Twitter's search box in the top right-hand corner of your Twitter page and then clicking on the latest tab. Once again, that's hashtag RRBC Spotlight Honors, all one word. And don't forget, those who have registered with Rave Waves Radio can call into the show and ask your questions live on air and speak to our guest. Well, speaking of our guest, today our Spotlight Honors guest is author Peter Wendt, who is talking to us from Morehead City, North Carolina. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. Do I understand properly that you live on a 40-foot sailboat on the coast of North Carolina, or is that just where you're talking to us from today?
No, I live aboard. I've been home now for 30 years.
30 years. Tell us what it's like to live on a boat for 30 years. You must have very good sea legs.
Pretty much. Some people would say it's camping with a lot of amenities. It has everything, hot and cold running water and refrigeration and freezer. I can keep ice cream, air conditioning. It's just a very, very small house, but I can move. If I don't like my neighbors, I can move very easily.
That's true. Well, I imagine some of your, I don't know, what kind of neighbors do you have? Do a lot of them have fins?
Actually, yes. Very recently, an 800-pound bull shark was caught here on the waterfront.
No kidding. 800 pounds. That's not somebody you want to invite to dinner.
No, that's a big boy. I see a lot of porpoise. I see quite a few porpoise up here.
Uh-huh. Wow. So living on a boat. So I assume you fish.
No, sir. That's what I don't do. I'm a scuba diver.
Oh, a scuba diver.
I scuba dive. I jumped out of an airplane once. I've never done that again. Once was enough.
I did it 5 times. That's how I got my jumping badge from in the Army.
You're crazier than I am.
Yeah. After the first time, I thought, okay, if I did it once, I can do it again. They kept telling me, don't worry, you're fine. And we were, you know, when you're jumping out of a military plane, you're on a static line. It's a little bit different. But then, and you're only about 8. They don't like you to be up too high because they don't want you. They want you to get to the ground pretty fast. So you're about 1,000 feet up when you go for a jump. But anyway, I learned my lesson. After I got out of the Army, I never did it again. Well, you know, before we get deeper into our conversation, tell us a little about yourself, Peter. I know you. I think in your bio, I saw you're a professional photographer, and like a lot of photographers I once worked with when I was a foreign correspondent, you lament the demise of the darkroom. But fill us in on the rest of your story.
Well, I got my degree from Rochester Institute of Technology, and just wasn't long before digital. And I'm not a fan of Photoshop. I like the darkroom, but all that's going bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
So on the other side was sound. And it used to be that you would have to put a mobile recording studio inside at least a 30 to 50-foot truck. Well, now you can actually put one in the trunk of your car. So what it did what it destroyed in photography for me, it opened up in digital recording, and I'm just an amateur. I'm just a hobbyist at it.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do computers, did sales service and whatnot, until about 12 years ago. I just got tired of it, and I just walked away and never looked back.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's sometimes the best thing to do. You know, once you get tired of something, you don't stick with it. Go to something new. You know, it's what you call life.
Absolutely.
Well, I know that. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Nikki McGee. But let me first off, before we get into that, let me share a short blurb about the book with our listeners. And this will kind of give you an introduction to what the book is about. When orphan Nikki is brutally ejected from a car, her life is in tatters. She needs the kind of help mob boss Don Johnny Mazzarisi and his family can provide. Nikki is a musical prodigy with a journey she must take, and they, along with everyone else who enters Nikki's orbit, are along for the ride. The story includes Lacia Popoff, a once world-renowned harpist, Drek Mason, whose six-man rock band isn't what his senses tell him it should be, Jimmy Clark, a Jamaican keyboardist who aids Drek in his search, and Nina, who wants to break into the music industry. From Chopin to Joe Cocker, Nikki's wish is to play, and play she does. She has a dream, and at age 15, she goes to her first rock concert where fate is going to intervene on a massive scale. Well, so I understand this is a debut novel, Peter. So I guess the first question I want to ask you is, what motivated you to write a book about a 15-year-old female musician, and what genre does the book fall under?
Well, fiction, for sure. Mm-hmm. Some people might say young adult, mm-hmm. but I think it's good for any age. I got motivated to write it by a conversation I had with my mother. We were discussing just family things. My mother's over 90. And I have a great-grandmother who was a concert pianist.
Wow.
And she had two children, one who, unfortunately, who would be, of course, a granduncle, passed away, died at age 9.
Uh-huh.
But when he was 6, he came home from seeing his mother play a concert. And I'm guessing at age 6, it was probably the first time he had ever seen her play.
Mm-hmm.
He went into the house, he sat down at her piano and played.
Wow.
Now, there are people like this who just have it. And of course, it can be anywhere from having a little bit of it to what would be Heinlein would have said in Stranger in Strange Land, where you just rock it. And I just couldn't get the idea out of my mind is what would it be like to have a gift like that?
You mean just sat down without ever having had a lesson and began playing chords or notes or what?
That is my understanding. The story of the family was that he just sat down and played, which indicates he had never done anything with it before. My brother was 8 or 9. He just picked mm-hmm. up the guitar and played. The ability, it runs in the family. I believe it's just genetic. But it skipped me. It skipped me in spades. I tell you, I can't hear. But I've always wondered, what would it be like? And mm-hmm. the idea just got into my head, and it wouldn't leave. And by the time I drove home from Florida from visiting my mom, I pretty much had the story in my head.
Wow. So this, the musician, I mean, Nikki, does she also, she's a prodigy, she sat down at a piano, or she picked up a guitar, or what instrument does she play?
Piano.
Piano, okay. So, mm-hmm. And does she go beyond that? Is she also a singer, or is she just plays the piano, or just plays? It's kind of a silly thing to say. Playing the piano is a marvelous accomplishment.
Well, she's the whole package. Mm. She composes, she plays, and she does sing. I did a lot of research when I
That's what
really
I'm
going to
ask you next.
That, you know, am I too far out on a limb? And really, no. There are a lot of autodidacts out there. My mm-hmm. understanding is Jimi Hendrix, Django Reinhardt, David
mm-hmm.
Bowie. Russell mm-hmm. Crowe, although he's not a musician, but the story on him was he applied to school, to do acting mm-hmm. school, And when they went in to see, you know, can you do anything? And are we going to take you? They turned him down because they said, don't get bad habits. You already do it.
Hmm.
So they are out there. And if you go on YouTube, you will find singers all the way down, I think, to age 6. You'll find mm-hmm. musicians. They're out there.
It's interesting you say that because I know I have a daughter who is now grown, of course, but when she was 5, she was listening to somebody play the piano and we were visiting in their home. And after they stopped, she went in and started playing almost the identical thing, sat down and started doing it. I don't know how in the hell I said, what is going on here? Is this a player piano, you know? And she did it. I don't know where that. I swear, I don't know where. She's an artist now. She took piano lessons and she started playing, but now she's into art. So she's mm-hmm. Doing very well. So that's. I guess she has that part of her brain that's very, very creative. I don't know how she could do it because I struggled learning how. I mean, I wanted to learn to play the piano too, and I struggled with it. And just reading notes and stuff is almost beyond me. It's like taking a math course in my mind.
Yeah, I swear. I look at sheet music. I might as well be looking at Chinese. we all, most of us, had some form of a musical education, one way or another. We're supposed to know what the clef does, and it's like, oh, well, I don't forget that.
Right. Well, I guess Mozart was like that. At 3, he composed his first symphony, I think, or it was at 5. I'm not sure, 4 or 5, something like that. But 5, he was performing all over Europe and
yes,
the four kings and queens. Yeah, so amazing. It's beyond me that somebody could have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that you wrote the book in present tense. Was there a particular reason that you did that? And here's another quick question on top of that one. Did you create the cover yourself? It looks like a very carefully crafted photograph that you're using for your cover.
No, the cover was done professionally.
Mm-hmm.
I hired a person, and I thought they did a wonderful job.
They did.
That's my second cover. The previous cover, I had liked the cover, but the emotion that it evoked was just wrong for the book. So
mm-hmm.
I ended up changing the cover. But it was an adventure doing it. I loved it. I had a great time putting it all together. As my mother says, when she read it, she said, Peter, it reads like you talk. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, that's good. That's actually good. No, but you said, you wrote it in present tense. Was there a particular reason that you did that?
No. I think at one point I had started off in past, and
mm-hmm.
the way it was in my mind, it didn't work. So I went straight to present tense and just told
mm-hmm.
the story as if it's happening right here, right now, and the omniscient part of it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just it's a matter of personal preference how you do that. Some people feel comfortable writing in present. Some people don't. It's just my books are written in past, but that's not that I wouldn't try present at some point. Maybe I might because I've done it when I was a journalist. I wrote stories. I actually wrote a couple things in present tense. Well, let's jump over to Twitter real fast and hear what people are, some of the people in the Peanut Gallery are saying here. Let's see. Here we are. Gwen Plano says, I really appreciated Nikki McGee and would love to know about the backstory for the novel. Well, we've got a little bit of that already, Gwen, and unless you've got more backstory you want to fill us in with, Peter.
Is that
let me
backstory
get to some more.
That would be in the book or backstory as to my creating of it?
Uh-huh, right. Fervain Greenhoe says, I love taking photos of flowers, waterfalls, forests, and all the creatures that cross my path here in the UP. He's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is a beautiful part of the country. And Faiza Bhatan, who's talking to us all the way from Mumbai, India, says, has the show started? It's kind of not starting on my PC. Well, here we go. To the rescue, Peter. We want to get back into the computer repair business.
No.
Beam Week says, living on a boat sounds like quite an adventure. If you're tied up, the adventure is probably what? You're not going too far, but you do take the boat out on occasion, you told me, right?
Sure, I can. Mm-hmm. I can. I could take it to Australia if I really wanted to.
Would you do that, a 41-footer?
Oh, sure. There's a great film out, I believe it's called Maiden Voyage.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that, about the women, right.
No, that's a different one. This one was, I think her name's Laurie Decker. She was 14 years old. She circumnavigated solo. And
oh,
I
my
think
God,
she,
that's
her
right.
boat was, I believe, 39 foot.
Wow. To me, that's beyond belief. I don't know how anybody could do something like that.
You jumped out of airplanes. if you've never done it, go with one person who does. And wait till you're 800 miles offshore, 800
yes.
miles from anywhere. And there's no one there really to help you. Oh, what a life.
Oh,
now,
no.
when you hit
I'll
a storm, yeah, it's rough. But let me tell you, the stars, you've never seen them like that.
I bet. I bet you're right. I've been on ships before, and yeah, you're right. At night, it's incredible. Something to see. Jan Sykes says, "What an amazing musical story," and that's for sure, Jan. Mary Adler says, "I too miss the darkroom. I truly love the hard work. When I talk to my amateur photographer daughter about the thrill of the darkroom, she laughs and goes to the lightroom, where absolutely anything is possible."
Pretty much.
Including the removing of the grain.
Now, if anybody can put that together, there's one little place in the book. And see if anybody can piece those two together.
What you mean, what? The you're talking about the dark room and what?
No, photography. It's my Hitchcock
photography.
Moment.
Okay. I see.
My Hitchcock moment.
Okay, I see. We just don't see your face, but we see you. Well, you know, I think what's fun about the darkroom is the way you can manipulate, the dodging and burning and all that kind of stuff you do with the enlarging process and everything else. It's a lot of fun. I really love working in the darkroom myself. I thought it was fun. Of course, now, like Mary says, anything is possible in the Lightroom, where including removing the grain from 6,400 shots. Yeah, I think that's true.
Well, I've got a Nikon that'll do just about anything. The last thing I still have to try, throw it in the drawer and see if it'll, darn some socks. The thing just does everything. But I learned it's not necessary anymore.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I'm a dinosaur.
Well, I mean, that's technology changes things. And I mean, I know a lot of photographers who resisted the digital age when digital photography was beginning to make its debut in newspapers, for example. And they said, no, I never use those stupid cameras. I don't like it. I like to set my own, I could do my own thing with my Nikon or whatever, or my Canon. And then guess what? Everybody moved, and the photography, I think, and the technology has made photography better, I think, in some ways. I mean, there's people who still,
Oh, agreed. Now, there's no way, at least now, to me, that digital will not do what Kodachrome could do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kept there, and it's so close. But because the difference for our general usage, there's just no need for darkroom anymore. Where do you buy film anymore? You have to specialty order. You have to specialty
order
everything. So now I'm in the sound.
Well, sound is, and learning to reproduce it and to capture it. That's, the technology is playing a role there too, I'm sure. Well, before we go any further, I wonder if you could share with our listeners your experiences as a member of the Rave Waves Book Club. How has RRBC benefited you as a writer?
RRBC is a great club. How has it benefited me as a writer? That's a very difficult one. I like the club. I think it's very, very worthwhile. Myself as a writer, That depends whether or not I'm going to be able to ever kick out another book.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki was a germ that got into my head. The only way to get it out was to put it on paper. That was
mm-hmm.
it. The only way to get it out. I'd like to have another one do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I've had a few ideas, but nothing like that.
Could you write a sequel, or is that possible?
I could maybe do, some people have said, well, you could, you know, do something with, you know, Don Johnny. And it's like, no, it's Nikki is not a mob story.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted to think of it and go, you know, mobsters, you know, they're not nice like that. And it's like, yes, they are. They love their children too. They're not murder and mayhem 24/7. I have a friend here who grew up in Rhode Island, and she knew a bunch of them. She said, yeah, one of them, yeah, they're nice guys. Now, don't cross them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people have this wrong idea. It's Nikki's story. It's not the mobsters. Although, for Don Johnny, Nikki has a very profound effect on him.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Your journey as an author, I mean, you said you got the idea for Nikki McGee when you were in the car returning from a visit with your mother. But did you know at any time before that that you wanted to be a writer? Did that ever enter your mind, that you wanted to do something like that?
Yes and no. Probably to the same extent that I thought maybe, you know, boy, it would have been nice to have been a musician.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until I actually got something in my head to where I have something to say. I don't know. My mother's warned me sometimes, you know, Peter, you know, just be careful of some of the things you want to talk about. But I like fiction. I like science fiction. I do have an idea for it would be in continuation of Nikki. And I need to run it past a couple people. It may be just too far over the top. I don't know.
What have you learned from the first attempt at writing a novel? I mean, this is your first time around, and it's not easy to write a novel.
No, it's not easy. It'll drive you crazy.
Right. Anything you didn't expect?
The hours, especially the hours at night. I found myself up at 3 o'clock in the morning with the headphones on, listening to music, and suddenly, you know, it's 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still writing.
Mm-hmm.
I found profound was when I started going in and revising and editing. I ended up taking, the third part of the book and just ripped it out. It just was not working the way I wanted to until I thought about it, and I got this idea, and I said, okay, the whole thing with Nikki is these people exist.
Mm-hmm.
You can push them far out the curve. Jimi Hendrix would be way out the curve. Mozart is probably about as far out the curve that most people would want to think about. I mean, look at the ages. He did things. I wanted to shove Nikki way out that curve. And there's one part in the book where Lesha basically admits where Nikki is on the curve. And then I just start thinking about, said, boy, can I really do this? And I said, yeah, why not? So that's in the third part of the book.
Well, that's the first step. I mean, you know, as the Chinese say, the first step of a journey of 1,000 miles is that first step, right? So there you go. You have to begin somewhere, and sometimes just getting off the snide and moving forward, that's the hardest part, because once you get started and you get yourself involved in the story, often it'll take off and it kind of pulls you along. Of course, you've got to be disciplined and keep the story in the right trajectory, the right arc. But I'm checking back onto Twitter real fast. Go ahead. What?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I have to know where I'm going. If I don't go, I have to know the end. I've got to know what I have to get to.
Okay, so you think it out pretty much. You thought out the ending before you even started the book, or were you got when you began the book?
I had the ending. I had the beginning and the ending before I ever fleshed out the middle.
Well, that's good. I can't do that. I just let the book kind of take me where it wants to go. Sometimes,
well,
but you're
it
right.
Did.
I mean, I have a vague idea, you know, where I want to go, and I think you did.
You know, if you're going to go from New York to L.A., okay,
mm-hmm.
leave New York. You have to get to L.A. Now, how you get there? Now, that's another.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story.
That's right. You got it. I'm just looking at some on Twitter again. It says Shirley Slaughter says, "My brother plays the piano by ear. It's always been amazing to me. He also used to have a singing voice, but time has altered his vocal cords." Well, that happens to all of us, Shirley. Pravin Greenhose says, "A friend of mine had never touched a guitar, but he picked one up at a yard sale and within 2 days was playing like a seasoned professional. Some people are born with the gift of music in their souls." I think you're probably right, Pravin. Jan Sykes says, "Like you, I believe that some are born with the music gene already built in." Well, I think Jan is. She's a musician herself, and she's been playing, I think, various instruments. I'm not sure, the guitar for sure, for quite a while. And she also writes music, as I recall. Tell me if I'm wrong, Jan. I don't want to embarrass you. Being
well,
Weak says, "I believe
she also does drums, because musicians
drums.
Often cross over and things." Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
she found an interest there, and there was a
mm-hmm.
conflict. But anyway, it's just part of the story.
When she found the drums, and not being a drummer yourself, did you talk to some people who are drummers and find out how you get started with that instrument or with those instruments?
Little bit. I did a lot of research on the internet. Now my
mm-hmm.
nephew is a professional jazz drummer in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the family, but I didn't get it.
Well, Beam says, "I believe music comes from the soul. Some people are able to tap into it without lessons." You know, and of course, Beam has written about a young woman who becomes a singer during the Jazz Age. And
yep.
So have you read that book?
Yes. Jazz Baby, sure did.
Jazz Baby, exactly. Well, good.
Good story, a bit gritty. A bit
mm-hmm.
gritty, but it was a very enjoyable story. I like the setting, too. I loved where he put it.
Yeah, it's a great setting. Mary Adler asks, "Has the inspiration for your next book shown up yet?" I think we kind of talked about that, but I'll ask you. You can ask that and answer that anyway if you want to.
We'll see. I don't know. I don't know if it'll pan out. It may be too over the top, but I have a thought.
Well, Beam says, "I have Nikki McGee on my Kindle. I'll have to move it up on my to be read list." And Shirley Slaughter says, "Fiza, refresh your page or hit the upper left button to start the show. That should do it." Fiza was having difficulty getting connected from Mumbai, India. Mary Adler says, "Trust your instincts. It's your story to tell." And that's for sure. You know, just let it go. If you think there's something happening and you see it.
That is true. Your name is on
uh-huh.
the cover. You own it.
Exactly right. You better believe it.
And the book does have, and I have to admit, it does have, it could, I would love to have a great edit, but I kind of had an experience with it, an editor, and I just
mm-hmm.
said, no. But at least with the reviews, people talk about the edits and some people talk about the voice, but a lot of people say the voice that started off to them is odd, that they get swept away with it. But everybody
mm-hmm.
so far, they all say good story. And to me, thank you. That's it.
Well, that's the whole thing. A story and a good story is the foundation of any novel. If you've got a good story to tell, then the next step is to tell it in a compelling way. And, of course, that's the challenge of learning it to be a good writer. So you had a bad experience with an editor. I mean, I use an editor, a professional editor on my books, but I've worked with editors all my life because I since I was a journalist with the Chicago Tribune back in the 80s, 70s and 80s and 90s. So I'm used to working with editors. Some people aren't. And it takes adjustments because they make suggestions, and sometimes people don't like those suggestions. So you have to kind of have a thick skin, I think, when it comes to working with an editor.
Yeah. A lot of mine's copy. I mean, I have problems with comma usage. And believe mm-hmm. it or not, I finally just gave up. I try, but two and two. Yeah, the T-W-O, look, that's not no problem.
Right.
Like, oh man.
Well, you know, there's software you can use, Peter, like Grammarly and some of these other softwares that you can use to help you with grammar and also punctuation, things like that. That kind of does it for you.
Grammarly, but, I've tried, and I found that there were times it would make its own errors, and I just said, nope, this is mine. I'll own it. I'm willing. That's fine.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your writing process. Do you prefer silence or a little noise when you write? And where do you write? Of course, I know you're writing on the boat, right? So how much do you typically write each day?
Well, I write at the navigation station. I have a laptop. And when I write, I've got the headphones on and I'm playing music.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
And when I do, I get the thought, I get the idea, and I think, dang, okay. And I might write for an hour. I might write for 10, 12 hours straight. It's just how I am.
Mm-hmm.
I quite often will start late in the afternoon, and I love writing at night. I love the atmosphere. It's dark, and it's not all bright. Kind of moody. Put the music mm-hmm. on, and okay, let's go.
Well, what kind of music?
Depends what I'm writing. I mm-hmm. listen to everything from classical to jazz to rock and roll, rhythm and blues. I do not listen to rap.
Mm-mm.
Some metal. Mm. It varies.
Well, I'm not sure if I could write to heavy metal. I think I would.
Depends on your scene. Now, come on, some good heavy metal. He's coming in, he's going to murder everybody. Oh, yeah.
There you go. That'll do it. I guess that's a good point. You make a good point. Well, listen, it's time to pay a few bills. As promised, I want to take a look at this our sponsor today. So here's some fascinating information from our sponsor today, Just Her Poetry by D.L. Flynn. So please take a listen for a second or two. I'll be right back. Hang on here, Peter, and we'll play this commercial. Hang on a second.
Just Her Poetry by author D.L. Flynn. Take a journey with D.L. Flynn as she blends her love of nature with her deepest emotions. Sit with her on the forest floor, observing its tranquil beauty, or stroll along the ocean's shore, admiring the vastness of its horizon. Here, in these peaceful moments, you'll be able to experience her thoughts and feelings in the light and in the darkness. This is a thought-provoking collection of poetry that invites the reader into all the seasons of a soul. Just Her Poetry by author D.L. Flynn, available on Amazon and other online retailers.
Well, that's I started looking at that book actually, and I'm intrigued. I don't pick up poetry very often, but I'm now that I'm a member of the RRBC and there are a lot of people writing poetry in the club, I'm beginning to learn that it's a genre that I need to become more acquainted with. So, and speaking of that, let me ask you this, Peter. What do you think, now that you've written your first book, what do you think makes a good book? What key elements does it have to have?
It's got to hold you to the story. And I think just entertain people.
Mm-hmm.
Just entertain them. That's all. I try not to message much.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit here and there. But I think just write a good story. Write something that people will enjoy.
If you know, and now that you've written this first book and you dealt with the theme of music, If you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh man. If I could have dinner with one person,
mm-hmm.
dead or alive?
Mm-hmm. And don't say Captain Ahab.
No. Actually, no. My first thought would be, no, I can't say that. I honestly really couldn't tell you. I suspect maybe Thucydides.
I'm sorry, who?
Interesting. Thucydides. Old Greek writer.
Oh, okay. All right.
Ancient.
All right.
Ancient. Maybe Dante. Hey, come on, Dante, you know? Tell me about this inferno now.
With him, you could play heavy metal music, I think. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Come on, that guy would probably groove to it.
Oh, brother. I think it's and now that you've finished this first book, and I know it's your first one, and you're still contemplating doing the second or the third or the fourth, who knows what you're going to do down the road, but now that you've done that, what has been the most rewarding experience in this whole process of writing?
Doing it.
Really?
Just
not seeing it out there?
Actually?
Yeah?
No, not as much. Yeah, there's an enjoyment. There's an enjoyment to a good review. There's an enjoyment to seeing it out there. But none of that compares to the time it took between when the idea started and when it was completed. That was a blast. I loved it. I loved every minute of it, every hour of it.
Well, then
it was probably the second best experience I've had, except for maybe photography school, which was
really
fabulous.
Well, I think that's, when you achieve that level of satisfaction and joy in doing something, then I think you're on the right track and you're probably doing something you should be doing. That's how I look at it, you know. Jan Sykes, I mentioned to her before, you know, she says, I only played the guitar, I'm back on Twitter here, as part of my other life with my husband, I wrote and recorded songs. You're right, Jazz Baby is gritty and I loved it. I did too. Very good. So she just plays the guitar. Well, that's, I don't say just. I mean, playing guitar is a feat in itself. I tried to play it, and I play a little bit, but I'm not very good at it. Joy Nuoso Labamajoko says, I know this author. I have read this book. Wow. Okay. Fantastic. And she also adds, but I could never write with music on. I like complete silence. Well, I'm like you. I'll play classical, a lot of Mozart, things like that. And sometimes I listen to jazz, but I don't like anything that has words and people singing in it because that distracts me.
Okay. Well, there in the book there are a couple hints at musical things, at other bands. I'll give one little spoiler. It's very, very, very early. It's very close to the beginning of the book. And of course, it's the Rolling Stones. See if anybody can figure that one out.
Well, I'm not. I won't be able to do it. I know Beam Weeks says all this talk of heavy metal has made me reaching for my Metallica CDs. And then he posts a guy playing heavy metal. If you look on Twitter, you'll see that, Peter. Well, look, you know, I hate to do this. We're going to have to bail out pretty soon because I see by the cuckoo clock on my wall that we're almost out of time. So we're really pushing it. We're going over like I always do, I guess. But I want to take a moment to say thank you to our guest, author Peter Wendt, for joining us today from North Carolina, actually from his boat. What's the name of your boat, by the way, Peter?
Blue Moon.
Blue
That's
Moon.
Blue Moon. That's how often I'll buy a boat, once in a...
Yeah, well, they're not cheap. A 40 footer, especially, definitely not. That's got to be pretty pricey. But anyway, I want to thank Peter for joining us from his boat in North Carolina. And so thank you, Peter. It was a great discussion. It was a lot of fun. And I also want to thank those who tuned in and who participated with us on Twitter with your comments and thought-provoking questions. And so, Peter, I'll tell you again, you might want to check out that Twitter feed because I may have missed some comments and questions, which I almost always do. And then you
I'll
also want to see
out.
What – yeah, you want to see what Beam posted. You'll like that.
Okay.
He's got a pick, he's got
and,
a guy. Yeah, go ahead.
And thank you, Ron. And I'd like to thank Rave Reviews and Nani. Quite an honor. Thank you very
yeah, it
much.
It is. I'm glad you were able to make it. And I want to encourage our listeners to check out Peter's book in the RRBC catalog and on Amazon. So with that, Peter, I'll say goodbye. And thanks again for everybody else for joining us on Spotlight Honors. And please join us again for the next edition of Wave Rave's Blog Talk Radio, which will actually happen in September since we're not on the air in August. So Rave Waves Blog Talk Radio, where all things literary are our passion. This is your host, Ron Yates, signing off and wishing all of you great reading and inspired writing. Goodbye.